It was during the first episode of the Mickey Mouse Club that the Mattel toy company introduced a new product, a toy gun that the company claimed had almost magical properties.
It's broken the sound barrier. It's the Mattel Thunderburp with the real vibrasonic sound chamber that's loaded forever and ever. No batteries, no caps. That Thunderburp looks like real, sounds like real.
Historian Howard Chudikoff says that until that October afternoon, no toy company had ever tried to sell merchandise on television year-round. The only time toy manufacturers advertised on TV was during Christmas. But then came Mattel and the burp gun, and according to Chudikoff, a professor at Brown University who recently wrote a history of child's play, almost overnight, children's play became focused, as never before, on the toy itself.
It's interesting to me that when we talk about play today, the first thing that comes to mind are toys. Whereas when I would think of play in the 19th century, I would think of activity rather than an object.
You see, for most of human history, what children did when children played was engage in freewheeling imaginative play. Elaborate narratives of pirates and princesses. Basically, they spent most of their time doing what looked like nothing much at all.
They improvised play, whether it was in the outdoors, the fields and the forests, or whether it was on a street corner or somebody's backyard. They improvised their own play. They regulated their play. They made up their own rules.
But Chudikoff argues, once TV and toys begin to supply children with ever more specific scripts and special props for their stories, the size of children's imaginative space begins to shrink. And that's not the only way that imagination comes under siege, according to Chudikoff. In the second half of the 20th century, he says, parents were increasingly concerned about safety, which again affected play.
Because then adults want to structure it more, to create environments that are safe, that are secure, that cannot be penetrated from threats from the outside world.
To protect their children, parents begin to place their kids in adult-moderated activities, which, says Chudikoff, has another benefit, especially to middle-class parents worried about achievement. They promise enrichment.
You know, karate classes and gymnastics, summer camps, not only create safe environments for children, but also give them enriched lives and ways to create self-esteem.
So clearly, the way that most children spend their time has changed. And of course, there have been other changes in the lives of kids. But a growing number of psychologists believe that these changes in how children play have led to changes in their cognitive and emotional development. Here's some of the evidence. Back in the late 1940s, some psychological researchers did a series of tests on children. In one of the tests, they asked kids ages 3, 5, and 7 to stand perfectly still without moving. The 3-year-olds couldn't do this exercise at all. The 5-year-olds could do it for about 3 minutes. And the 7-year-olds could stand pretty much as long as the researchers asked. In 2001, some researchers actually repeated this experiment. But as psychologist Elena Bodrova explains, the results were very different.
Today's 5-year-olds were acting at the level of 3-year-olds 60 years ago. And today, 7-year-olds were barely approaching the level of 5-year-olds 60 years ago. So the results were very sad.
Sad because the children were less able to do something called self-regulation. Self-regulation is the ability to control emotions and behavior. It's a key component of a broader set of skills called executive function. Kids with good self-regulation aren't impulsive, they have self-control, discipline. And this self-regulation is incredibly important. In fact, good self-regulation is a better predictor of success in school than a child's IQ.
Self-regulation predicts effective development in virtually every domain.
This is executive function researcher Laura Burke of Illinois State University. She says make-believe is a powerful tool for building self-regulation. That's because during make-believe, children engage in what's called private speech. They talk to themselves about what they are going to do and how they are going to do it, laying out the rules of play for themselves.
We find that this self-regulating language is highest during make-believe play. And this type of self-regulating language, which we call private speech, has been shown in many studies to be predictive of executive functions.
Basically, it's through this private speech that children control and regulate themselves. In fact, private speech is how adults control and regulate themselves, too.
If we look at our own use of private speech, what we find is that we're often using it to surmount obstacles, to master cognitive and social skills, and to manage our emotion.
Unfortunately, the more structured the play, the more children's private speech declines. Essentially, what's happening is that because children's play is so focused on lessons and leagues, and because kids' toys increasingly inhibit imaginative play, kids aren't getting a chance to practice policing themselves. When they have that opportunity, the results are clear. Self-regulation improves.
One index that researchers, including myself, have used to look at that is the extent to which a child, for example, cleans up independently after a free choice period in preschool. We find that children who are most effective at complex make-believe play take on that responsibility with greater willingness and even will assist others in doing so without teacher prompting.
Despite evidence of the benefits of imaginative play, a number of child development experts say free choice play is in decline even in preschool. Here's psychological researcher Dorothy Singer of Yale.
Because of the testing and the emphasis now that you have to really pass these tests, teachers are starting earlier and earlier to drill the kids in their basic fundamentals so that play is viewed as unnecessary, a waste of time. I mean, I have so many articles that have documented the shortening of free play for children where the teachers in these schools are using the time for cognitive skills.
Singer and others argue that it's not actually helpful to leave imaginative play behind. They say that all that wasted time is really not such a waste after all.
That's NPR's Elise Spiegel with the most emailed story right now on NPR.org. You can see a list of all the most emailed stories you heard on today's show at NPR.org/Bryant Park.